Well, g'day folks, and welcome back to Plane Crazy Down Under, episode 25 of the program that looks at the world of aviation from an Australia-Pacific point of view. I'm Steve Vischer, and waiting patiently there is Grant McHerron. G'day, Grant.
Hey, Steve. How you going, mate?
Well, we've just had an exhausting session recording with the Airplane Geeks guys, and boy, it's been a day for technical troubles, I'll say that much.
Yeah, it started off with your quality going through the tubes and in terms of your microphones and systems, and then Dan was having problems logging on, and quality of my comments was bad all the way through, so we'll hold off on that bit. But definitely technical issues all the way through, especially when Max realized he'd forgotten to press record properly.
Well, we all know that feeling, don't we, Grant?
Oh, yes. At least I'm the only person who's done it while interviewing.
Yeah, so there you go, Max. There's something to aspire to. Anyway, folks, coming up on this episode of the show, we're going to talk about a few bumps and scrapes to do with Qantas and Air New Zealand. And coming up a bit later on in the show, we've got a package of interviews and even a little recording of me trying to attempt to fly a 737 simulator that was recorded a week or two back at Flight Experience here in Melbourne. And to top that all off, we're also going to cross over to the United States and catch up with Matt Hall, and he's going to update us on his latest preparations for the 2010 Red Bull Air Race season. So that'll be coming up a little bit later on, but for now let's head off with the first story.
Excellent. Yeah, and the first story for this episode is about Qantas stripping first class from their 747s. They're apparently going to remove first class from all of their 747-400s, leaving the product only on the A380s, which do the London and Los Angeles routes. So we have talked about this before. We've spoken about Qantas considering the removal of first class or scaling it down to focus more on economy and premium economy and so on, which is where most of the people are. But yeah, this is the first real indication that we've got that they're going to do it. This is from a report leaked into the Australian Financial Review, which is apparently showing a seating plan that leaves only 12 first class seats on the A380s and squeezes in additional business and premium economy classes. So down to 12 on the A380s and none at all on the 400s.
It certainly seems like a sign of the times, Grant, although, you know, you do hear lately that the economies around the world are talking themselves up and saying that things are on the way to recovery, which makes me think maybe perhaps over the span of this year there might return a bit of a demand for the business class seat. Makes me wonder if Qantas might be acting a little bit prematurely by taking this move.
Well, they're actually putting in additional business and premium economies. So it's just first. First is the one that's really taken it on the head. No one's really paying for first anymore. It's they're paying for business or preferred premium economy. So that appears to be where the demographics are going. And if things do start to improve and come better, it'll probably be more business. And, well, they're going to have a lot of A380s, so they'll get a lot of first class on there, though.
I guess the point I'm getting at is that everything, that seems like a good idea at the moment, people tend to have short memories. I think when the last recession was on, the last big one in this country, say 20 years or so back, you know, as we came out of that recession, everybody was much more frugal in terms of their spending, and particularly in business circles. But, you know, as time went on, we sort of all fell back into that culture of excess, if you like, which is they never seem to last forever. And then we've fallen into the latest recession that we've had. Now we're coming out the other side, and one wonders as time goes on. And then again, if they're pulling the seats out, I guess, Grant, they can always put them back if the demand for them returns.
Yeah, well, this is apparently going to cost them about $450 million. To do across all their 744s and the A380s. So it's not small change by any means, but I would imagine it'll pay itself off pretty quickly with the increased number of passengers they'll be able to put on the planes.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it, mate, that the Qantas mainline fleet's just taking another little incremental step further down the line of being a tad more Jetstarised.
Well, as I've been saying lately, you know they've gone the final step when you see an A380 in Jetstar colours.
Yeah.
It's a good stir, mate. Yeah. But actually, a 744 in Jetstar colours, now that could be possible.
Well, of course, the 74s are getting on a bit in age. The Qantas' 74 fleet is not the youngest. It's not the oldest either, but still, they've got some reasonably high-time airframes in that fleet now, so maybe they might be looking, you know, it might be something they might look at.
Yeah, you never know your luck. Qantas do generally get a good sale price when they sell their ex-aircraft because they are highly maintained and so on. So who knows? Although the market's shifting a lot and secondhand aircraft prices are through the floor, et cetera, et cetera. So who knows? But speaking of older aircraft, we've got another story here still with Qantas about a 767-300 having a wee bit of a tail strike while departing from Sydney.
Yeah, it looks like that they retired the wrong plane last month, Grant.
Yeah, the wrong 300 went out the door.
Yeah, this was a Qantas flight flying from Sydney to Melbourne on one of their city flyer services, no doubt. 120 passengers on board, and was forced to return to Sydney after a what's described here as a minor tail strike as it was rotating off the runway about 5 p.m.
Yeah.
Saying here it encountered a wind gust which lifted the nose up more sharply than usual. So certainly can't blame the pilots for that if that was the case.
Yeah, no, and it was only a paint scratch, so it definitely wasn't quite the equivalent of the Emirates skid marks down the runway routine.
Yeah, and of course, tail strikes in the wake of that Emirates thing, any aircraft here that has a tail strike now, no matter how minor, is going to attract the attention of the media, and I guess it didn't escape our attention either, but yeah, it looks like here that the plane returned safely. Nothing huge in the way of damage was observed on the aircraft. The passengers were kept on board for 10 minutes while the emergency services did a quick inspection of the plane, and I guess it was pulled back into the terminal and was replaced with another one.
Yeah, well, the plane was cleared to fly again, and apparently there was just a bit of paint scrape mark south of the cross runway. So a little incident there, but nothing too super serious.
Well, Grant, speaking of emergencies around aircraft that operate around this region, our friends over at Air New Zealand have had a bit of an incident at Narita in Japan on a flight that's heading back home to Auckland.
Yeah, unfortunately, Air New Zealand had a problem over in Narita with one of their new 777s. They had to do a rejected takeoff. They were rolling down the runway and they received a warning message about the auto thrust system. And as a result, they decided to abort the takeoff. So they weighed out the anchors, they threw the brakes on, and as a result, they overheated the brakes. They put too much heat into the tires, so the plugs in the tires popped out to deflate the tires, so they didn't burst. And they had to hose down the aircraft's brakes. So as a result, they closed the runway at Narita for about 30 minutes while they sat there cooling everything off before they could be brought back to the terminal.
Yeah, sounds like another good save though, Grant. This actually happened back on January 31. Yeah, no injuries from the incident, which was great. Air New Zealand's probably going to have to shell out a bit of dough for runway 34 left at Narita there being closed for about half an hour, because I'm sure that's a rather busy airport.
Yeah, well, at least they have multiple other runways to take up the strain. But
interestingly, Grant, it's been reported to the New Zealand Civil Aviation Authority for investigation. Although I'm sure it would need to be mentioned to them, I would have thought that the Japanese would have their own authorities that would be looking at that. I'm sure there is, it's just not mentioned here in the article, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I'd expect the Japanese are looking into it as well, but the Civil Aviation Authority in your home country does have to be notified if you have an accident overseas. So if it was a Qantas jet, CASA would be involved, the ATSB as well. And, well, I'd be notifying CASA, and the ATSB would be lending a hand, no doubt, if it required investigation. But, yeah, incident stats, all that kind of stuff will have to be updated. And speaking of being updated, Air New Zealand did have another issue, and that was just recently passengers on an Air New Zealand flight from Sydney to Auckland were told to practice emergency position when the plane's flaps developed a problem. It was about to land when the pilot told passengers to prepare for an emergency landing, and that was cancelled, though, after the crew managed to fix the fault. So it sounds like it may have had a potential flap imbalance or a problem getting them in and out. Just interesting that the article here refers to the plane's flaps, which allow landing or takeoff at slower speeds. Wow, they got it right.
Yeah.
That's great when you find somebody at the Sydney Morning Herald actually getting something somewhat right about aviation. Woohoo! Yeah, no, it looks like they may have had a flap deploy problem. Maybe it was a bit of an imbalanced flap situation, or it could have been that if the flaps weren't going out enough, they'd be coming in pretty fast. But yeah, no real indication as to what it was exactly that caused them to actually declare an emergency and tell everyone to brace. That's kind of full on.
Yeah, get everybody's heart racing there for a while. But I guess in that case, if it was coming in no flaps, it's obviously coming in faster than it should be, or faster than they'd prefer to be coming in, so... once again, it looks like the crew's done a great job there, and no injuries. You know, it's probably some people with a little bit of, shall we say, accelerated heart rates. I'm sure if I was on board that plane, I'd have been one of them. But
it's that situation where your whole life flashes before your eyes, and you go, "Hang on, wait, what?
Yeah, that
I did what?
I didn't do that.
Are you sure that was my life? Oh, wow." Yeah.
Well, mate, turning our attention now across to Jetstar, and they've had a little bit of news this week, and looks like the Jetstarisation of Qantas is one thing, but now there's Jetstarisation of self-service kiosks.
Yes, let's take it down to low-cost carrier check-in. They reckon that the traditional check-in desk will soon be dead at Jetstar as the company moves to 100% customer self-service through a combination of electronic kiosks, the internet, and its new SMS boarding pass technology, which is something we mentioned earlier. This is coming from an article in the Australian newspaper, and it's by Steve Creedy. We just got to have at least one Steve Creedy article per episode, don't we?
I hope he listens to this show, mate. He must love us.
Oh, well, we're definitely getting his name out there. But, yeah, this article is quite interesting. Apparently, at the Singapore conference, Jetstar Chief Executive Bruce Buchanan said the move would mean no change to airport staffing numbers and it would make checking in easier and more hassle-free. Side note from Grant, so long as the computers are working.
Well, at least they're not using Amadeus, Grant, as far as I know.
Yeah, well, there is that. And so long as they're not hosting their IT in an IBM data center in Auckland, we've got a good chance.
Yeah. It seems to me, mate, in this world, and we spoke, I think, on the last episode or the one before about all the increasing security concerns around the world. Yet it seems to me that in one way, Jetstar and a number of other low-cost carriers seem to be moving in the other direction. They seem to be taking humans, checking humans, out of the process a lot more, which to my mind would make it perhaps a little bit easier for the bad guys to do whatever it is that bad guys do.
Well, I mean, for Jetstar here, this is just to get you checked in. It doesn't actually get you through security and the gates and any further scans. So I guess they're just going, well, we're just getting them processed. You guys double check.
Yeah, well, one of the other interesting things here, Grant, is that I guess as a plus for passengers, and it would save a bit of queuing, I guess, is that you can actually get your boarding pass sent to you 24 to 48 hours before the flight rather than having to queue in a line at the airport.
That does help. And I mean, a number of us are using the print your own boarding pass routine. Typically, it's about 24 hours before your flight. The flight opens to register online, to do your check-in online and get your boarding pass printed on your own printer. But one of the things Jetstar's doing is this whole SMS boarding pass. As we mentioned this last year that it was being announced, well, it's actually starting to go ahead with trials happening later this month. And it's using your phone with the SMS on the phone, and the system reads your phone screen to figure out numbers and things like that. It's really quite fascinating.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting innovation, and I'm sure if Jetstar gets in there and starts to make that system work, then it won't be long before the other low-cost carriers, Tiger may perhaps to a lesser extent, but of course Virgin Blue, who also follow a similar model, I'm sure they'll be keen to get in on the act if this proves to be a success for their competitors.
Yeah, well, especially as this one works with text SMSs, you don't have to be WAP enabled and things like that. It'll apparently work with older phones as well, so that really does open up the opportunity for pretty much everyone being able to check in with their phone. There's another reason to guard your phone.
Yeah, that's very true. Now, Jetstar also has been in the news up in Singapore, Grant. They've actually chosen Singapore's Changi Airport to be its Asian hub.
And, that's right. They are definitely breaking into Asia. This agreement covers Jetstar, Jetstar Asia, and Changi Airport Group. And they're going to increase the number of existing flights and offer more destinations from Singapore. It's pretty impressive expansion going on there.
Interesting here, it says in the article on Australian Aviation's website, it is expected that the two carriers. Now, that's been an interesting point in itself lately, hasn't it, Grant, that some people think they're one?
Yeah.
But let's see those carriers add a number of A320 services throughout Asia, while the long-haul services with the A330-200s are also on the cards. The chief executive officer of the Changi Airports Group says that we are honoured that Jetstar has chosen Changi Airport to be its largest hub in Asia. We're committed to supporting Jetstar's growth at Changi by helping it to grow traffic and to keep its costs low. By hubbing at Changi, Jetstar will gain from further interline opportunities with the many airlines that fly here, including its parent Qantas, which already uses Changi as an Asia hub. That probably, that's interesting, Grant, if you think back to what Sarge Ahmed was talking about in the last episode, where, he was bringing up the idea of why perhaps Jetstar wasn't operating into the Middle East. If they were ever thinking of doing that, now they've got a pretty good hopping off point to do that from.
The only problem with that is that you're then a two stops to the Middle East instead of a one stop direct to the Middle East, which is what you really want if you're going to go up against Emirates and the other airlines coming from that area. Setting up Singapore as a hub is really to help them push into Asia proper, into Vietnam, Malaysia, Thailand, and various other areas into China, maybe also eventually for long-haul Jetstar routes into Europe, he said, looking at the microphone with one of those eyes.
Yeah.
It's the indications are there. Jetstar is going to start pushing into Europe and opening up new routes there that are not economically feasible with Qantas mainline cost structures. So that's the thing to watch for coming out of here. This is also a bit of a shot across the bows of Tiger Airways, our recently IPO'd Tiger. This is putting some pressure on Tiger by having Jetstar come into its stomping ground. You know, it's into Singapore, which is where Tiger's from. So they're building up their presence there. They've got Jetstar Asia. They're not bringing Jetstar Pacific. I'm not seeing any mention of Jetstar Pacific in this so far, but they are expecting that as a result of this, they're expecting revenue for Jetstar Group to grow to $2.5 billion this year, up from $1.85 billion in 2008-09. So that's a pretty big prediction.
Yeah, well, Grant, when you talk about them flying into Europe and Southern Europe, I guess in particular, that's on the cards for them. But they are, of course, waiting on the deliveries of their Boeing 787s if and when they do come, and that's probably still a few years away. So, yeah, and who'd want to be crammed into an A320 for a long-haul flight like that? I know I wouldn't. So,
They are at least able to use their A330s on it, so that has helped keep them alive and not have to worry too much about the A320s for those long routes. But, yeah, they're definitely hurt for the lack of 787s.
And like we said last week, Grant, they obviously see that Asia is where their growth market's going to be, and that makes a lot of sense from where I sit. And placing themselves in a great hub like Changi gives them a lot of access to a lot of other destinations, particularly through their partnership with Jetstar Pacific. So, yeah, an interesting move, a pretty smart move from the way it looks here, mate.
Yeah, no, not too bad at all. Okay. We'll see how this one develops, especially once they get their 787s.
Okay, Grant, so the last story we're going to have a look at here, mate, is Garuda, the Indonesian state-owned carrier. And, Grant, they're looking at an IPO now. Of course, we haven't had a great track record talking about Tiger's IPO recently, but now Garuda is moving down the same path, $300 million US dollar initial public offering.
Yeah, which is somewhat larger than the Tiger one. Tiger were looking to, well, they initially started off going for 500 million Singaporean dollars. They then downgraded that to 200 to 250, and I believe with the oversubscription, they've definitely made the 250,000. Sorry, 250 million. But yes, it looks like Garuda have decided to join the Asian airline IPO. Perhaps they've been spurred on a little by the Tiger one. They've managed to restructure a large block of debt, and they're going to go for an IPO to raise some more funds to help cover costs of new equipment and the restructuring required to get them into new routes into Europe and so on.
Yep, granted, of course, that foray into Europe is something that they badly need after having been recently banned from flying in EU airspace. Of course, that ban was lifted late last year. They're looking at starting some services up to Amsterdam.
They're looking to go from Jakarta to Amsterdam via Dubai. So speaking of Asia taking on the Middle East, it's an interesting way to get to Amsterdam.
Yep, and one of the ways it intends to achieve this, Grant, is by increasing its fleet size. Its current fleet size is about 67 aircraft, and it's planning to take that up to 116 aircraft over the next 5 years. They're actually taking delivery of 24 aircraft this year, so that's a lot of deliveries, mainly 737-800s and Airbus A330s.
Yeah, that's occurring during 2010, and they have cancelled their order for 787-8s, the 8 series of the 787. They've shifted that across to 777-300ERs. They can't wait for the 787s. They've said, no, that's going to cause us too many problems. Take us off the 787 list, transfer us across to the 777-300ER, and we'll get on with our growth plans. Thank you very much.
Well, roll on the popularity of the 777, mate. They're certainly becoming the aircraft of choice for many airlines around the world. We've seen that a lot with a lot of the carriers operating into this country.
There was also that rumor going around about Garuda jumping into bed with SkyTeam. So maybe this is going to be coming along as part of the expansions with new aircraft, new routes. But I don't know. It's still Garuda. I'm still nervous. And one hopes that they've updated their training and recurrent training regime following the revelations of the Yogyakarta situation.
Well, at least they've satisfied authorities that they've done that, because now, of course, they're allowed to operate back into Europe. Some of the other destinations it's looking at adding, interestingly, are Frankfurt, Paris, London and Rome. So that's interesting. But the other really significant point here, Grant, is that they are looking at spinning off a separate low-cost carrier. No, not another one.
Yeah, we don't have enough low-cost carriers flying around the place. So I think a lot of people are looking at the Qantas method and going, oh, there's the way to survive.
Yeah.
The Qantas Jetstar situation is definitely proving to be a big winner if you take a look at the big picture for the group. If you're willing to sacrifice and cut back on you know, eat into your market share with the full carrier and replace it with the one from the low cost, well, yeah, you've got a good chance of making something pretty good there.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, mate, with Garuda's reputation as it is at the moment, I don't know that jumping into the idea of an LCC for them would be a real smart move right now, because even though it's probably not the case in reality, at least the perception amongst the general public is that many of the low-cost carriers perhaps don't have the same standards of the full-service airlines, and like I say, their reputation certainly has taken a battering over recent years, Garuda, so they would have to be, I think, very, very cautious and very, very clever in the way they bring in a low-cost spin-off of their mainline operations.
Yeah, no, I agreed with you on that one, mate.
Coming up after the break, Matt Hall drops in to update us on his plans for season 2010.
We're not worthy!
And some highlights from our Facebook fan night at Flight Experience Melbourne. All that and more when Plane Crazy Down Under continues.
Looking for a studio to record your next project? From recording and song production to music videos, disc duplication and DVD presentation kits designed to get you noticed. Audiovisual Media is more than just a recording studio. It's a complete solution for musicians with recording and music video packages available. Record your next project at Audiovisual Media and score free studio time. To find out how, visit our website at www.audiovisualmedia.com.au or call us on 0407 091
G'day, this is Owen Zupp. Join me in May 2010 as I trek around Australia in a Jabiru 230 to celebrate the centenary of Powered Flight Down Under, and in the process raise vital funds for the Royal Flying Doctor Service. Check out my website and follow my progress at www.thereandback.com.au. In the meantime, sit back, relax and enjoy the in-flight service with Grant and Steve on Plane Crazy Down Under.
At PCDU, we actively encourage participation from our audience. To leave a comment or suggestion, or for further information on how you can support the podcast, please visit our website at www.planecrazydownunder.com. Well, it's the start of 2010, folks, and that means the Red Bull Air Race season for this year is not too far away. So it's high time we caught up with our good friend of the podcast, Matt Hall. Matt, where do we find you this time?
I'm in North Carolina at the moment, in the snow, actually, just trying to finish off our new race plane.
Awesome. And how's that going? The new plane's coming up all right?
Yeah, we've got a few little things, a few little bugs we're working on, but overall, it's looking really good. We haven't flown it yet, so it's still a piece of machinery sitting in a shed as opposed to an aircraft. But we're getting our final inspection done within the next 24 hours and flying within the next 48. And then we'll get to see if all these modifications are going to pay off.
Yeah, that's always the big question. You've got all the ideas, you've got the plans. It looks good on paper, but it's once you get it in the air, you're going to find out. Have you got a pretty long testing program?
No. In fact, it'd be lovely to have a long testing program, but just because we're behind schedule in the completion of the aircraft. And unfortunately, the day after we get it flying, I have to go to Europe for some meetings. I'm away for a week, and then I'm only back for 5 days before the plane has to ship to Abu Dhabi. So pretty tight. Yeah, pretty tight. So if things don't go well with the modifications, I'm kind of gonna have to go fairly aggressive with trying to just get the best of a bad situation. So I find myself a little bit up against the wall at the moment, but I'm still confident everything's going to work out right. That's for sure.
Does help the stress, doesn't it?
Yeah.
With the engine on your new plane, Matt, we know with racing cars, for instance, that they'll get an engine and put it in the shop there and run the engine in for quite some hours before they actually put it in the car. Is that going to be the case with the aircraft, or will you just have it pretty well green when you take off?
We've run the engine in the shop where it was manufactured for 5 hours, and that's one of the requirements for the racing, is that it has to show that it can run for 5 hours before it goes in the aircraft. So it's done that, so it's done a little bit of time, and they were pretty happy with the power it was producing. We've done a few little extra bits and pieces to the engine while it's been in construction on the aircraft as well, and we'll do our own ground runs in the next 24 hours. So the engine still has not been fired off on the aircraft yet. but that'll happen in the very near future. And then we'll and then it's just going to be a matter of getting the cooling system sorted out, because we've modified the cowling quite a bit. So it's that's going to be the biggest thing for us. And the temperatures we're going to be adjusting it to here, where it's snowing, compared to the first race in Abu Dhabi, where it's going to be in the desert, is going to be quite the challenge.
Yeah, that's quite the temperature differential. I know you probably wish the snow was up in Vancouver where it belongs at the moment rather than there. So that's going to make life very different for you flying there compared to the desert.
It will make it different, but it's actually not a bad way to get the aircraft airborne for the first time, because if we do have cooling problems, I'd rather be in a very cold environment so that we can experiment with the cooling without hurting the engine, as opposed to if I was doing its first test flights back home in Australia at the moment, and you did have a cooling issue, you could really do some damage to the engine very, very quickly.
Yeah, no, it is probably the similar temperature to what you've got there, but we're centigrade, not Fahrenheit. We were just chatting with a person in Philadelphia, and we're at 32 here in Melbourne, and he's at 35 there. But he's Fahrenheit, we're centigrade.
Yeah, I think we're 25 at the moment, so we're even lower.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, pretty cold, yeah.
Anything else you'd like to tell us about the plane?
It's going to be pretty light. We've got it well below the min weight of the race, so we're going to have to carry quite a bit of lead in the aircraft to bring it up to min weight. But that gives us a lot of flexibility in how we distribute the weight. And it's also going to be quite fast, I think, if you compare it to one of the other planes that's just flown here. Or one of the other race pilots has done some modifications similar to me, but not completely. And his plane is he's added quite a few knots to his aircraft from last year. So it's all pretty exciting, and we're just hoping that it all comes together as we plan.
Yeah, Matt, with the upcoming season, I'm just having a look here on the Red Bull Air Race webpage here, and we've got two new pilots this year. It looks like Addison Kindleman and Martin Sonka. Do you know too much about these guys?
I haven't spent a lot of time with them. I've met them in 2008 a few times. When I was doing my training in Europe prior to becoming a race pilot, I did some air shows and some competitions with both of them. So I do know them, and I've been communicating with them via email, especially Addy, because he has purchased my race plane from last year. So he's going to be racing at that one, and he's been asking a few questions on the setup of the aircraft. So I've been helping him a little bit. So it's good to have a couple of new guys, if only just for the fact that I'm no longer the bottom of the the ladder there. So good to have some new blood in there, that's for sure.
Does Addison, does he have a similar history to you? Is he a military pilot in his past, or has he come up through the civilian pathway?
He's come up through the civilian path with aerobatics, but the other rookie, Martin, he is a Czech military pilot. So he's been flying around in the L-59, I believe, most recently. And I was also led to believe that he flew in a style that was recognizable with me. So, I've heard a few comments that he's going to be the one to for me to watch even. So that makes it pretty interesting.
That's a bit of a worry.
A bit of a challenge.
That's competition. It's always good to have someone pushing you, otherwise you get lazy.
How many races are we having this season? I think it's a slightly longer season than last year, isn't it?
It is a slightly longer season. I don't think the complete calendar is announced yet. The time frame of the season is actually going to be a bit shorter. We start in Abu Dhabi about 3 weeks earlier than we did last year, which is good because it means it's not quite as hot as it was last year, and we finish a whole month earlier than we did last year. And we at this stage, I believe, we're at 8 races for the season.
Yeah, that's going to be a much more much busier schedule for you. Less downtime between races. That I guess that could be both good and bad. Bad that you've got to race between places, but good that you keep the pace up.
Yeah, exactly. I'd prefer to do more races because you get into a rhythm and you can be very focused all the time. Whereas it's actually quite difficult mentally and physically to keep doing the ups and the downs, because when you're up, you sort of you only want to come down a little bit so then you can re-engage for the next race. But if you have more than about 2 weeks off, you really come down off that high energy and hard-hitting mental and physical attitude, and then when you turn up to the next race, you have to really work the team back up again. Even though we're only talking maybe 3 weeks, when you're operating at that level, that does have quite a significant difference for how you perform for the first couple of days of the race.
That would make for an extra challenge. So, okay, there's definitely good and bad there.
Yeah.
Talking about the upcoming races, and of course the one that we're interested in here is the one in Perth. We believe that's in mid-April, I think the 17th and 18th.
Yeah.
Mount Hall Racing is offering some supporters packages for people to go over there. Do you want to tell us a bit about those?
Yeah, well, when we were in the middle of the season last year, we sort of thought that, you know, there was more than likely we were going to have a race in Perth, and we started just throwing around the idea that it'd be great if we could help people get organised to get over there. So thinking about how we could do the logistics and the organising to get people from, you know, the airport on the east coast right through to arriving back on the east coast again, was our initial thought. And then we started thinking, well, that's not fair to our Perth based people, so we need to throw some extras in there that they can then join in on the tour. And it sort of grew from there, and we ended up, it was an on again off again thing for quite a while, because it was quite a challenge to organise when you start looking into it. But we got a tourism agency on board, AvTours, who organised aviation trips all over the world, to Oshkosh and to New Zealand. And so we got into an agreement with them where they would basically handle all the logistics and the bookings and etc. for us. So we decided on what we wanted to offer as the package. We bundled it all up, and they helped us with all the setup, and there we go. So the exciting thing for me is actually that if you book before the end of February, you go in a draw to win. There's three prizes up for grabs, and the number one prize there is you get to go for a fly in the Red Bull two seat aircraft I think it's on the Friday before the race, which should be quite a unique experience for people that don't get to race.
Wow, yeah, is that the one that Joel Haskey flies in Sydney?
No, it's actually a Red Bull. It's an extra 300L, so it's the six cylinder extra. So similar to the one that Joel has, it's just got an extra 50% horsepower. So I'm not exactly sure if it's going to involve flying through pylons. I haven't heard the details of that part yet. But there's with the media plane at all the races, they put up a set of pylons specifically for the two seat aircraft. So I can't guarantee it. So I don't want to sell it off as it's happening. But it's a more than likely possibility that the aircraft will be, you'll get to go through some pylons, well, hopefully between some pylons will be the ticket we're not through them.
Excellent. Is there a weight limit on that? Do you have to weigh in at a certain level to be able to fly in that aircraft?
I couldn't really tell you. There obviously would be some weight limit, but I don't think it's anything abnormal. Yeah, it's basically any healthy individual can go and participate in an adventure type activity can fit in the extra. Hence why they use the extra 300, because it's a very versatile aircraft for taking lots of different weight ranges, etc.
Yep. No. Excellent. I guess most of the weight limits I've seen on aircraft have related to spins and things like that, and center of gravity for
exactly.
Your performance envelope.
And of course, now that Matt's met us in person, so, folks, he'd know that's a weight is a big factor for us.
There's a good incentive for slimming down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we'll just give people a link there. Matt, if people want to check out the supporters package there, they can go to your website. That's matthallracing.com. They can also go to avtours.com.au/redbull10. But if they just go to the avtours.com.au website, they can find out all about the supporters package there. I'm sure you won't have any trouble selling those out, Matt, and come what may, I know I'll be over in Perth, so we certainly look forward to catching up with you over there. And the other business you've got there, Matt, is the Mustang flight. So you're still doing that? How's that all going?
I typically only get to do that in the off season, just because I get so busy, and in particular this year is going to be fairly limited in what I can do with the Mustang. But we've got 11 people that are in the Mustang together, so I think about six of those guys are involved in flying it and doing a passenger ride. So it's just ticking along. It's just that it's not me with the smile flying it. So but it's still a privilege to be a part of something like that. So even when I'm not flying it, just to hear that people have gone for fly or see photos of it or videos of it is actually quite a proud thing for me to think, I own a part of history and such a grand part of history. So it is a very cool thing.
Because you were flying it just after we caught up with you. You'd taken it out and run a few people through after the last show us your wheels.
No, that's right. Yeah, I've just been out at Tamora, the show there. And then we actually just recently got back from Evans Head for the Evans Head fly-in on, I think it was the 10th and 11th of January this year. Yep. So we had it there and did some displays and did a heap of flights out there for people. And it is a fantastic thing. And everyone gets out and they're just overwhelmed with how great it is. And most people that go for flying the Mustang, it's been on their to-do list their entire life. So it is satisfying to help people achieve part of their life ambitions.
Oh yeah, no, that's definite. I know some of the aviation podcasters in the US, and just for the fun of it, I've chipped in as well. We have a standing bet: you chip in some money, and the first aviation podcaster to win a media flight in a P-51 wins. And of course, everyone's expecting that Steve Tupper from Airspeed will win it. The rules are you can only pay for the fuel; you can't pay for a flight. It's got to be a media flight. It's like they set a good challenge on that one.
If it gets a big pot, let me know and we'll split it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, well, the rule is that it sounds good to me. I'm in for a cheat.
Only if anybody finds out. Yeah.
The rule is that the winner gets the pot and buys the first round of beers at Oshkosh 2010.
Well, there you go. Yeah. that's still not a bad way to do it. You go for flying a Mustang, pay for the fuel, and then drink a heap of beer.
I'm all for it.
Sounding better and better. Yeah.
Real quick question: how was it flying with Joel? You went for. I understand you and Joel went for a flight over Sydney. How was that?
Yeah, I had to. I took Lane Beachley for a fly. We'd been at an event together, and there was an auction for a fly in Joel's plane, and I was kind of volunteered as the pilot.
Oh, what a hardship for you that must have been. Yeah,
yeah, so she bought the flight, and so because I hadn't flown with Joel's business before, I had to do a quick check flight with him in his extra, and it was good. Yeah, we went out and we just went out to the Western training area west of Sydney there, and I asked him if he wanted to see anything particular or to tick the insurance boxes and everything, and he just said to have some fun, so I did.
Oh, awesome. And,
so it was a good flight, and he seemed to enjoy himself as well, and said that he was going to go and try a few new things, so I hope that's going well for him.
Cool. Oh, we'll have to give him a yell. We've had him on the podcast before, so we'll give him a yell and see if he wants to have a chat about how it's all wound up for him.
Yeah, very good, very good.
The really cool thing about your exploits in the Red Bull Air Race, Matt, and particularly with the success you had last year, is that it's doing such a great job in raising the profile of Australian aviation. I've noted with interest since the last season finished, you've been in the media quite a lot, in the television media, taking journalists up for flights and really promoting not only what you do, but what Australian aviation can achieve in general. So one of the things we're trying to do with this podcast is raise the profile of aviation, but I think you're doing a much better job than we are.
Oh, thank you for that. It is one of my objectives. When I started this, I had to sit and think about why I was doing it, what was I doing it for, and it's definitely not for fame or fortune, and it's definitely not for fortune at the moment, that's for sure. But it is important to me. I'm very, as we've talked about before, I'm very passionate about aviation. I'm very passionate about being Australian and the history Australia has in aviation. So it's important to me to keep that spirit alive. And, I just realised that if anyone's going to do it, I've got the perfect platform to do it with at the moment. So that's a lot of my motivation when I'm rallying up the media support and things, is just to let people know that it is a fun thing. It's not an exclusive thing. And it's actually been fantastic with the number of people that have contacted me with their support, but also the number of people that have contacted me saying they've had their first training flight and they absolutely love it, and they thanked me for their for inspiring them to get into it. So that's true reward for me. That that just makes me feel brilliant. So it is almost a selfish reason I'm doing it in that regard.
Folks, you can find Matt on Twitter. It's Matt Hall Racing. Follow him on his Facebook fan page. So everybody should log on there and show Matt your support. The first race is in Abu Dhabi. That's March 26th and 27th, 2010, and of course April 17 and 18, 2010, for Perth. And we really look forward to getting over there and supporting Matt in his endeavours. He came third overall last season, so we're sure that the ladder's going to be climbed at least one rung, and hopefully two, at the end of this season.
That'd be a fantastic result, wouldn't it?
That'd be awesome, mate. Well, thanks, Matt. Really appreciate your time, and good luck with the snow and cold weather over there. It's good for the engine, but it's not really good for the body.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Thanks very much, Matt Hall. We'll talk to you again in a few weeks.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
And as Matt Hall sails off into the cold North Carolina sunset, Grant, sounds like it's a big season coming up, and he's not going to have a lot of time to get that plane up to speed.
Yeah, he's not going to have much time at all. That's a pretty intense engineering test phase to go through in such a short amount of time, and hopefully they can keep it flying while he's away to do some of the other tests until he gets back. But yeah, very compressed, very intense, and not a little stressing.
Yeah, then of course, Grant, if anyone can get that plane running, we're sure it's Matt. You know, we were up there just before Christmas watching Matt fly the Giles around, and he put on a bit of an impromptu display there, ostensibly for us. We'll say that anyway, won't we, mate?
Practice and warm-up at Shepparton and then the victory lap. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So nobody should be in any doubt about how he's going to have that plane up. It perhaps might be a little bit below par for the first race, but then he's going to have a few weeks to get down here to Australia and really get it fine-tuned and put on a great display for everybody there in Perth. So if you can afford to get across to Perth and you'd be interested in Matt Hall's spectator package, like I said in the interview there, just hop onto his website, which is matthallracing.com, and you can click on the supporters to a link there. So,
And just a clarification for anyone who's not familiar with Lane Beachley. Matt mentioned he was the pilot to fly Lane Beachley around Sydney in the Red Baron Red Bull Extra. Lane is a surf legend from Australia, a very famous surfer here, and she picked up. Won the auction to win the flight. So if you look for Lane Beachley, that's LAYNE to find out more about her, her background as a surfer, and apparently she also has a signature range of jewelry. There you go.
So once again, a huge thanks to Matt Hall. That was sort of arranged fairly hastily, that interview, and we're glad that we could get him there on Skype.
Another great little interview with Matt, and we're going to rush to get this one out in the next episode as soon as possible, so you can all hear about this before the end of February, so you can get in for the three prize draws. Win a ride and a two-seater extra.
Well, we'll leave that one there, folks. Coming up after the break, we'll have our package of highlights from our Facebook fan night there at Flight Experience Melbourne.
Hi, I'm Will.
And I'm David.
And we're two of the voices in your head.
Come join us in the virtual hangar for a little good old-fashioned hangar flying.
Well, it's not really old-fashioned.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, it's a Skype-based virtual hangar that only exists on the internet.
But we got beer.
That is true.
And we never know who we might run into.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I really did get stick time in that F-16.
Okay, you win. Come join us for some good old-fashioned hangar flying.
Look for the Pilot's Flight Podlog in iTunes.
Or visit us at pilotsflightpodlog.com.
Well, howdy. I'm baggage handler Chuck Armstrong from juniorfly.com. When I'm not sending your luggage donation to Siberia, I'm listening to Stephen Grant from Plane Crazy Down Under. I know they could use a donation. I think I'll send in your bags.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're listening in from. I'm Saad Ahmed from FleetBuzzEditorial.com, and I'm here with the guys from Plane Crazy Down Under, and we hope you enjoy the podcast.
And welcome back, folks. Now, normally about this point in the show, we would be having our history segment from our friend David Vanderhoof. Unfortunately, David is quite unwell this week, and he had very much been looking forward to providing us with a report. So, David, if you're listening to this, mate, we hope you get well soon, and we'll be looking forward to another one of his reports as soon as he's well enough. Maybe he's not too crook over there, mate.
Yeah, I know. He was the email we got about not being able to record with the geeks indicated he was in a bit of pain, so hopefully he's coming right now.
I hope that wasn't brought on by the stress of us constantly nagging him for material, Grant. It wouldn't be that, would it?
Hmm.
Very interesting point.
Possibly. Anyway.
Okay, on with the show.
No, not much pressure, not much pressure.
No, just the daily calls.
Okay, mate, so now we're going to move to our package of interviews and a selection of audio that we took from our recent trip to Flight Experience in Melbourne.
That's right, we were there as part of the Flight Experience Melbourne Facebook fan page gathering. The first 20 people who made it in got a freebie 10-minute flight. They just had to register on the blog site and be a fan on the Facebook fan page. And yeah, it was a great time. We had a number of people through there flying and a few of the instructors around. So of course, being there with my trusty H2 Zoom voice recorder, I was right in there and interviewing everyone I could get my hands on, which I didn't get everyone, but I had a pretty good go at it.
Yeah, so the package that I've edited down here, folks, goes for about half an hour. It'll start with about a 10-minute clip of me attempting once again to fly a Boeing 737 simulator. I don't think I left too many scratches on it this time, mate. It's about my third or fourth time through there now.
Yeah, you're getting there. You're getting there.
And from that, we managed to interview three of the fans that were there that night and also three of the instructors that were trying to get away from our microphones, but we blocked the doors and, you know, all that sort of stuff so they couldn't get out. So, mate, we'll just cut to that now.
Let's go for it.
Okay, so we're going to put it up to 40%, our N1. At 40%, our engines will hopefully stabilize and then we'll increase the thrust to our takeoff thrust and keep our hand on the throttle till our V1 speed of 125 knots. Then our rotation speed will be 1 knot higher at 126. Rotate the nose to about 10 degrees. And then as the main wheels come off, you can keep basically pulling up to a 15 degrees nose up pitch, and we'll be pulling the gear up. If we pull up too hard, too fast, we're going to hit our tail at 11 degrees if our main gear is still on the ground.
Okay. That wouldn't be good.
That would not be good. So your left hand there, thanks.
Where are we going?
And, yep, and that's right. And put your hand here and let's bring these up to 40%. So just maybe grab them like that. Yep, that's better. Good. That's it, 40%. Fantastic. Keeping an eye. And those engines are stabilising, so let's come up all the way. Keep pushing them up. Good.
All right.
Sorry, that's my bad. There we go. Keep coming up. There we go, that's just a bit down to 100, that's 110. There we go.
Right.
Steering with your feet. Fantastic, thrust is set.
Thrust set.
Keep your hand here till V1. Okay, pull up now.
Gonna pull up now.
Yeah. I don't know what.
Clear
we'll
the
barns
of the cows.
There we go.
Positive rate of climb?
Yeah, we're just gonna push it up a little bit more. There we go. And you can put the gear up when you're ready.
Can you keep it at about 15 degrees? Or?
Yeah, you can put, just a bit down. You're on about 17 and a half. It's about 17 there. There's your 15, good. Okay, you can flap one. Bug up.
All the way up?
Oh, no, sorry, flap one, sorry. Okay, good. We're going to do a left-hand turn, and we're going to come around to about 280. You can start pulling the powers off a bit and go flap up now.
Flap up now?
Yep, and just pull the powers off just a little bit. There's 5,000 feet, so we'll just come back down. Actually, while you're here, we'll actually go right. There's a bit better view to the right.
All right.
Okay, 100. Yep, just then start coming off to the right. We'll pull your power down. Just keep that nose up a little bit more. After takeoff checklist is complete. KLSV.
Las Vegas.
Nellis.
What heading? 270.
100. We're going to turn right to. And we're going to maintain 5,000, so we just need to get back down. But we're going well. We're going to maintain 222 for our speed. We'll probably turn on the inside of this ridge. So we'll just keep it coming around in a bit of a semicircle. Because we want to keep it as tight as we can. Coming around to 190. Just 30 degrees angle of bank will be fine. There we go. Good, pull back and just maintain that 5,000. Just keep pulling back a little bit more. You're trimming good. That's what we want to see. Okay, just lower the nose a little bit. We've got some traffic. That's good. That's a climb. That's just a little bit more. That's a climb we want about there.
Want to clear that mountain, I suppose.
Oh yeah, well and truly clear it. I was keeping an eye. So our traffic's above us, 1-2. It's
terrain.
That's
terrain.
Fine. It's just sensing a closure rate, and we can see visually the terrain is not inhibiting us. Our flight plan. Got a bit of traffic on the screen today.
Busy day.
Some are pretty close. Some are okay. We should be right. Everyone's the same level. Sorry?
190 on this heading.
Yeah, 190. Do you want the flight director on?
No, I'll hand fly from
No,
here.
Okay. There's the strip and there's the desert. Good, just...
I see that traffic there, actually.
Crossing at your 11-ish?
Yeah, that's
at
it.
Your 12 now.
Do you want to level at 5? Or
just yeah, level at 5. And you can manipulate the throttles just to maintain 220, which they're pretty good at the moment. Just keep an eye on that traffic. He's 900 below. We've got another two out on our left, which are 1,100 below.
What's the normal nose up at it? Does it maintain
it
a nose
flies
up?
It's called body angle. It's body angle.
I find I'm chasing it here, whereas if I try and go level, I find myself in a descent.
No level. The body angle is about 3.5-4 degrees. So keep about. It matters with your weight. See, today our weight's a bit different. So our body angle today is actually a bit higher. It's about 5 degrees. Just air would be exactly on 5. See, I don't load it with this much fuel. We've got a lot of fuel there. Just for what we're doing.
Yeah, so I couldn't work that out because I was chasing it. And if I level it, I'm going down. You know?
We'll drop down to 4,000 real slowly just in the turn. We're going to start doing our base leg. So we'll turn to 280. You can go down and I don't think we'll be able to get a... Yeah. Just going to have to do it all. Good. Slow it down to 180. Just kept the speed on a little bit longer just to do it. Oh, yeah. And
nose
so,
up there, yeah.
Yeah, just bring that nose down. And just bring us into flight idle. Yeah, that's good. Just keep coming down. We're back at 5, so we'll just keep her. There we go. Try and keep her there. I'll just put on a little bit up. That's what we want to see. Okay, now start there. Turn back to runway heading at 011. Just going to pull out flat 1 for us to try and get us. Just level out at 4,000 here too. There we go. Fantastic. Keep the turn coming. Yep.
It's touchy, isn't it?
It is quite touching.
The last time I flew this, it took me ages to get used to that, you know.
There's the runway. Have you got inside?
Oh, yeah, I got it.
Land on the right. Okay, just keep that. That's good. That's about what I want to see. About 4 fingers up, same as a Cessna. Works. Funny enough.
Roughly.
Let's go down to 160. So just flight idle, just pull the power off, the little bit of power I've got on, good. And you can go flap 10 when you're ready. Going to be doing a flap 40 landing, landing speed of 133, we've got no wind as of yet. So just come a bit to the left, and then we'll take the gear at flap 15.
Right.
Which you can do flap 15 now if you like. Just drop it, so, and gear down.
Good. It's 24.
Yep, and just the gear down, just take them at the same time.
We're going this runway here?
Yeah, the right-hand runway.
The
01 right. Keep
three
it going.
Green, yep.
Yeah, 3 green. That's right. Never not seen 3 green in the sim, so.
Yeah, well, I guess.
Let's, we just dropped the nose. We just got on our PARP here. We're just still showing high. So I'll just put a little bit. Can we have flat 30, thank you? And I'll set our landing speed of 133. That's good. That's a good descent rate. Flat 40 when you're ready. As we come down. We'll just add a tiny bit of power before we get too slow. Okay.
One thing I find with this is it's a little bit offset.
Yes, you will. You'll get your crab angle there. So just keep the nose... That's good. We're just going to intercept this angle. Come a bit to the right. Yeah, that's enough. Just a real little bit. There you go. And put a bit of left rudder in when you're straightening up. Good. We'll keep her on. Yep, keep her coming down. Okay, we're going to put a bit of power on so I don't let you get too slow. There we go. Yep, put that on. At 100 feet, we'll start gently pulling the powers off. We're coming in a little bit high, but it's fine. It's a long runway. We're a 737. Okay, come a bit over to the right. That's enough. Just a little bit. Good.
50.
Okay, start pulling off.
30.
That's it. We're a bit nose high. There 20. We go. Bring it around to... Yep, that's it. Just very little. That's it. And just left rudder. That's it. Good. And pull your thrust reverses now. Good.
That's fine now. You always got to sit like this, don't you?
Good, and just manually pull thrust reverses down and manually toe brakes to a stop. Yep, all the way down, good. And toe brakes, fantastic. And just set the park brake once you've stopped. Which is just there. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
We'll get
carried. Manage not to crash it again.
Okay, I'm standing here just outside the Flight Simulator Centre with Rick Mondello, and we're going to have a quick chat. Rick, hi, thanks for having a chat with me.
Yeah, no worries. How are you going?
Yeah, not too bad.
That's good.
Okay, first question's up for you is, mate, what's your aviation background?
Yeah, I've been flying for 25 years now, so it's been a long time. I actually started off when I was 17. Been right through the whole system, a whole lot. Worked my way up through the different companies along the way. Went into Ansett, was 10 years with Ansett. Yep. Sort of flew for Ansett for many years, on the BA-146 predominantly. Was just about to go on the A320 when they collapsed. So it's a bit of a shame in that. Yeah. And then after the Ansett days, obviously things weren't too good in aviation for a few years, and then just went back into it at one stage there. And then just for family reasons, just found that airlines these days are just a bit hard.
Yeah.
It's you never home, especially at the moment, getting jobs in Australia. There's not a lot, so overseas are the better jobs and the better paying jobs, but you're only ever home probably, if you're lucky, 7 or 8 days a month.
Yeah.
So it's just too much. So you decided to go into flying simulators and teach your people to fly.
So how many hours would you have total, and what kinds of aircraft would we find in your logbook?
About 8,500 hours all up. So there's about 4,000 on jets and a couple thousand on turboprops, and then another couple thousand on twin engines and single engine aircraft.
Yep. Back at the start of it.
That's right.
How'd you go with the start? Did you do anything like mustering or charter operations or things like that?
Yeah, charter, just the usual story going back in the 80s then. Yeah. Sort of, you get your licence, then used to just jump in the car and drive up north. I was over in Perth in those days, so yeah. Went up in the Kimberleys and got my first job in the Kimberleys, flying for a charter company.
And how are you finding it? How long have you been here with Flight Experience Melbourne?
Been with Flight Experience for 6 months now.
Okay. How are you finding it?
Yeah, it's a great job, obviously. Get to do lots of flying in the new generation 737 and get to meet a lot of people and get to show people what happens in the airline industry, basically.
Okay, excellent. Any high points that you've had for this last 6 months? Any memorable moments?
There's no memorable moments as such. I think every flight's a memorable flight. I guess the one day when something actually did go wrong and turned into quite an adventure, the person was very interested about it, was we're just flying along, just doing a line flight. So the person wanted to know what it was like to fly from point A to point B, just like normal airline operation. And we just got into the cruise, and all the main screens just went blank.
Oops.
And sort of had a bit of a look, tried to get the screens back up, the wind come up, and had a really close look, and you could just make out certain things, information on the screen, but it was very, very difficult. And end result of the whole thing was that we could either shut the sim down and start all over again,
yeah.
Or if the guy, which at the time he was quite keen on it, I said, look, if you want to look at what we're doing here and actually just take over like a real situation and a real flight, if this would have happened, we can just take over and actually fly it manually and do the whole lot manually. He said, oh, that'd be great. I'd love to see what happens. So basically he did the flying. I just read the bits I could read. We did it all manually and just used navigation aids on the ground and the one or two little things. We could just see airspeed. We could see the attitude, at least we could have the important stuff. And you could see DME distances. So we could work out the distance and then just worked everything out mentally and do it manually, and it turned into a perfect landing from KL into Singapore. We did a nice landing in Singapore and it worked out fine. And the gentleman involved, he was rapt seeing what goes on and what can happen and how you get around doing things like this.
Yeah, because it's not uncommon that screens do go dark, and it has occurred that all of them go dark on various aircraft. So.
Oh, that's right, yeah. He said it's not a normal occurrence, but it does happen, so yeah.
What's, say, the best thing about working here with Flight Experience Melbourne?
Well, it's good in the sense it's a nice regular job, you know. It's sort of, you don't have too many really early starts and don't have too many really late finishes. So, you know, just a good lifestyle fits in with general life. The other good thing about simulator flying is that, yeah, you don't have the big boring times where you're sitting there in the cruise with nothing to do for 10 or 15 hours. So that's another benefit.
Okay, I'm here with Josh Katz, who's just come out of the simulator. Josh, how was it?
It was great fun, great experience. I'm glad that I came down, definitely.
What's your background with aviation?
Don't really have one at the moment. I'm flight sim, major flight simmer. Spend a lot of money on my computer, and yeah, just that's about it thus far.
So I take it you're flying Microsoft Flight Simulator and that at home?
I am indeed, and my computer's trying to handle it, trying to move up to Windows 7 because at the moment it's a bit laggy.
So this was sort of like the ultimate for you. It was like Microsoft Flight Simulator, but with the real controls and cockpit wrapped around you, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. It's great to have like everything that you can just touch with your hands instead of clicking with a mouse or moving around with a joystick. It's a lot easier.
And I noticed Ryan gave you a pretty good briefing about everything and ran you around.
Yeah, he gave me a good lecture. And then after, we were talking about Swinburne and talking about just future stuff, that how he went to Swinburne and did the aviation course there and gave me all the kind of stuff I'd need to do before to get it in.
Yeah, so that's what you want to do?
Definitely. I definitely want to pursue aviation. Yeah.
So what was the best part of being in the sim?
It's pretty much all amazing. The fact that you can just put your hands in and you're in control. And the main fact that is he let me take control of it. He didn't like take over and do stuff. He told me what to do and I just took control of it. It was great.
Okay, I'm standing here with James Costa. James, how are you doing, mate?
Good, thank you.
Now, James, you're one of the staff here at the simulator?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I started here in October last year, so...
Excellent. Now, James, let's have a chat with you about... let's start with your aviation background. I understand you fly aircraft as well.
Yeah, I started when I was 15, and I'm just finishing off my commercial licence now, then moving on to a command instrument rating, and then hopefully getting a job.
And how many hours have you got now?
Just over 200.
And so what have you been flying? What's in your logbook?
Mainly 182s and Seminoles at the moment. Okay. Before that, 172s, Warriors, Decathlons, 152s back in the day.
So you're doing your twin command instrument?
Yeah, I'll be doing that next, so once the commercial is done.
You said a Decathlon in there. Have you done a bit of aeros?
No, just tailwheel endorsement in it, and then did a bit of flying to tow gliders, so had to get some tailwheel time up.
Yep. Okay. How long were you towing gliders for?
I didn't start it in the end, because I broke my neck on the first lesson, so...
Okay, there's a story in that. What happened?
We're coming into land and the instructor was showing me how to do a landing in the Pawnee, which is a pretty powerful agricultural plane. And as we were coming into land, he kicks my right-hand rudder rather than his left one, and it caused the plane to yaw hard over to the right. And then we flicked it about 60 knots upside down, skidded about 10 metres along the runway and flattened the cockpit. So
you were sitting in a side-by-side aircraft, yeah?
Yeah, it was a dual Pawnee, so it's been retrofitted. It's got two seats side by side.
Because, if you fattened out the fuselage, I could see a side by side seating in a Pawnee.
That's it. They didn't even fatten it out much, so it was pretty cozy. Yeah. Too cozy. The rudder pedals were too close, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. If he thought he was getting his left and got your right, that's oops.
It. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so how long did it take you to recover from that?
About 6 months altogether. I was in a neck brace for 12 weeks and then a soft collar for 2 weeks and then slowly got back into flying. So.
Get back into your medical and all that kind of stuff.
That's it. Had to go through a few loops with CASA, but they saw the light in the end. It takes a bit of convincing.
Okay. So I guess you're definitely in the utility category. No fun inverted for you now.
Oh, there is. There is. The doctors just don't look on too closely when I do that.
Okay, so where to with your flying? Where are you heading from here?
After this, I'll go north and do charter and then hopefully get into an airline once I've got enough hours to apply.
Cool. And how long? So you've been here since October. So how do you find crewing, like being the instructor on the simulator?
Oh, it's great fun. It's all the enjoyment of flying without the stress of having to be back on time or having broken parts. I mean, we do get some broken parts, but they're not usually serious. And it's great because people coming in want to have fun. They're not here to do a job. They're here to enjoy themselves. So it's great.
Yeah, I know Dominic said in the past that she really loved how everyone had a smile and it was a real big experience for them.
Well, that's it. We're here to have fun. We're not here to teach people how to fly a 737. We're here to make them enjoy it and see what flight's all about. You know?
Any particular high points or fond memories?
Oh, I've had a few. Kai-tak approaches can be fun sometimes, quite memorable. The Kai-tak approach, when you get the, you know, you're saying, hold the back pressure, and they look at you and say, back pressure now. Was that on the throttle? And by the time they do that, they're in the buildings. So.
You've hit the checkerboard.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. It looks a bit different now. It's great fun. We meet some great people, and it's good to be able to share the enjoyment of flying with the general public.
Okay, Seamus, was tonight your first go flying the 737 sim?
No, it was actually my second. The first time I did a few circuits in Melbourne, then some circuits at Avalon, and tonight I did a circuit at Las Vegas.
And that was Las Vegas in the evening?
It was coming to evening, so okay. It's dusk.
Yep. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was amazing. You could see all the casinos along the strip, and yep. It was just amazing.
And so I take it, obviously, if this come back for more, you really enjoy flying the sim?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. It's basically as real as it can get.
Cool. So what's your interest and background in aviation?
Well, I've always loved planes as a child and wanted to be a pilot, so I'm about to start my pilot training at Oxford Aviation Academy at Moorabbin Airport. Yep. And so hopefully get my private pilot's license in the next 2 years. Yep. And then go on and become a commercial pilot.
Cool. So you're going to do like a university course associated with aviation as well?
Yes, hopefully do a degree at Swinburne, which is then coupled with the commercial pilot's license at Oxford.
Are you the first generation interested in flying in your family, or do you have a background of it?
Mum's always liked planes. I think I had a great uncle in the Air Force, and my uncle had his private pilot's license and had a Mooney, which he loved flying.
Yeah, they were very nice aircraft. Did he take you flying?
Well, at that stage, I was 3 and I was too scared to go in. And now I want to be a commercial pilot, so...
So you'd come back and do this again?
Oh, definitely, without a doubt.
So your school does the aviation through school?
Yes, it's done through school. So in Year 10, you do a theory class for a semester. And there's usually 40 or 50 boys that do that. Then 10 from that are selected to go on in year 11 and do their GFPT. And then if you are proficient at that, you are then offered the opportunity to then go on and complete that and do your private pilot's license.
Well, congrats on being one of the 10.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, definitely come and do flight experience. And it was just an amazing night, so thanks.
Cool. No worries, mate, and good luck with the future.
Oh, thank you very much.
Cool. Okay, I'm here with Ryan Harvey, one of the flight instructors at Flight Experience Melbourne. What's your background in aviation, mate?
I started flying when I was 16 years old in Bendigo, in a Piper Warrior 2, and stopped flying to save some cash for my uni course, which I did at Swinburne, starting in 06, and went through to 08 and graduated with a Bachelor of Technology Aviation. And now I'm currently working for Flight Experience still and working for Melbourne Airport and looking for that elusive job.
So with Swinburne, did you get a pilot's license?
Yeah, we got multiple pilot's licenses. We worked all the way up until a commercial pilot's license with frozen ATPLs.
So you got your multi-engine instrument?
I've got my multi-engine, not instrument.
But with the course, you did a commercial license single engine and then you went and did your multi?
Correct, yeah, that was sort of an added feature of the course. You could, at the end, with our course it's changed now, you could do an instructor or an instrument, and I'm still haven't decided which way I'm going yet.
You said you're working down at Melbourne Airport. What are you doing there?
Basically consulting in airside safety management and assisting the manager in the ground transportation management department, which looks after the forecourt area of the airport.
Okay, where all the hire cars and everyone picks up and drops off and that kind of thing?
Correct.
So you've been working here at Flight Experience for how long, sorry?
I was one of the first to start. We started in February of 08 when the store first opened, and I've been here ever since. I do most of the training for the new pilots, new instructors we hire.
And how do you find working here?
Good, because I only come in when I decide to and when I'm needed, so I sort of dictate my own hours.
That's excellent. So you've got a lot of flexibility here.
Very much so, with some very flexible owners.
Okay, what's some of the high points of working here?
Some of the high points are basically giving you tend to forget some people have never been in a cockpit before, and basically we're bringing that to them. They walk in the store, and this is the one thing they've been looking forward to since Christmas or since their birthday, and it's really good to see the smile on their faces and just see how much respect they gain for a pilot.
And any high points in your flying outside of here?
Yeah, I went on a study tour with Swinburne Uni. We went around the world for 3 months. I flew the Airbus A380 sim. I think they gave us a certificate. I was like number 40 in the world to fly it. We flew the Boeing 767 sim. We worked for Rolls-Royce. We worked for Jet Airways. We work for... It keeps going... I'm just trying to think. British Airways. We did a lot. We saw the A380 get made from start to finish. We touched a 787 over in Seattle, number two off the line. So, yeah, I've got a lot of high points in my career with aviation.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. That's better than most people, I tell you.
I'm lucky. It did cost a bit, but it was worth it. Come and visit us at the sim if you've got any questions or anything about getting into flying. We're always got an ear open and I would like to have a chat. So, yeah. Or come just for a fly. We'd love to take you for a fly.
Yeah, come fly with me. It's great fun up there. Thanks, Ryan.
Not a problem. See you later.
So, Shane, is this your first time in the flight experience simulator?
Yeah, first time down here.
What's your background in aviation?
I got my PPL a couple of years ago, sort of after starting many, many, many years ago. So, yeah, now I just get out and sort of whenever I get a bit of spare time or cash, head out and go for a bit of fly.
Cool. And whereabouts do you fly from?
Rabin. Okay. Royal Vic.
Oh, cool. You're Royal Vicar, yeah. Which kind of aircraft are you flying mostly?
Mostly now I do fly in the Alpha, try and get out. Like, I've learned how to do some aerobatics last year, so I get out and have as much fun as I can. But other than that, I just participate in their competitions once a month in the Warriors.
Cool. Yeah, that Alpha is gorgeous. I went for a fly in that back in Easter. It was just, oh...
Yeah, it's a nice plane. It's very comfortable. It's very responsive. Yeah,
I went in a Yak. Andrew Temby, friend, runs a Yak out of Coldstream, and that was like, he's a serious aerobatics, doing avalanches and things like that. So, yeah, if you can't afford to go in a Yak, the Alpha's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'd like to get out to the Yak one day, or like, you know, we know some people up in Bendigo with the Nangchang, so yeah. I'd definitely got to get up there. But a few years ago, I first went with Joel Haskey out of Sydney. I went and had a go with him years ago or whatever, and it was a good time, and he sort of turned me a few shades of different colours and stuff.
Yeah, he's threatened to do the same to me. We interviewed him a little while ago. He's on one of our show episodes. So how many hours you got?
About 130, I think, give or take. Yeah,
so primarily in the Cessna 152 and then the Warriors?
Yeah, mostly in Warriors, and I learned to fly in a Victor Aventura up in northern New South Wales, where I've done most of my PPL training up there.
Do you find the Alpha is vaguely reminiscent of that bubble canopy side by side?
Yeah, like that's why I like it. So it's nice and roomy, and you know, it's a lot more responsive, a bit more power stuff, than the Warriors and the Cessnas.
And do you agree that life is better inverted?
Oh, of course, it's always great. You know?
Now, you said about the competitions at Royal Vic. Do you want to explain for everyone what they are?
Oh, every month they have a competition, sort of just random kind of things. They test your flying skills and abilities. From like, the last one, the big one they have at the end of the year is the flower bombing, which is it's a lot of fun. Probably just some hands-off flying and instrumentless circuits. And I've only done a few last year, but they're good fun, and I'm looking forward to getting them again this year. Like, if anyone's down in Royal Vic or anyone's come down, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. Good lunch guys too, and you can really sort of learn things and pick things up from other people as well, which I found great.
Yeah, we did the Dawn Patrol with the Royal Vic guys, and a friend of mine used to fly with them ages ago, and I was his co-pilot on a flower bombing run. How many competitions have you done?
I think I've been going in like 5 last year, so I was sort of hoping to get in and do them all this year.
Yeah.
So, working permit.
Work, weather and funding, yeah?
Yeah.
So where to with your flying? Is it going to be for fun, or are you going to grow it and, you know, more competitions with... do you want to get competition aerobatics?
Yeah, I'll go. You know, it'd be good to have a go one day, but as long as I'm having fun, I'll just keep going, and you know, that's all there is to it. I'm not really looking to do it as a job permanently. Maybe, you know, maybe a semi-retirement or whatever, a bit of instructing work or something here or there, but I just enjoy going out every now and then, taking the girl out and having some fun.
Cool. And so speaking of fun, how'd you go with the simulator tonight?
Yeah, it was good. Like, it's very realistic and quite, it's different. You know, it's a great experience. And, you know, I'd like to come again. So we might have to start saving up some cash. And
Oh, you got that balance. Aerobatics. Go fly for $100 hamburger or more sim.
Yeah. So yeah. I think the aerobatics wins out more often than not. So.
Yes, I can attest to that. Okay. Anything you'd like to say about the sim?
It's a great time, great experience. If we get on there, come down, have a chat to the guys. They're all a great bunch of guys down here, and yeah, pretty helpful.
Okay, cool. Thanks very much, mate.
Well, I got to tell you, mate, what a fantastic night that was. Any excuse to get down there to that simulator is good enough for me, I can tell you. Not that I need much of an excuse.
Yeah, no, I if I can get a chance to go in there with Carlo and do a few line flights and do some preps for some of the packages we're selling to people in there, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. I'm quite happy to go late in the simulator. It's totally worth it.
It's interesting. I was actually watching Carlo, the owner of Flight Experience Melbourne. He was in there at one stage with one of the instructors, and they were doing single engine, like asymmetric departures in the 7.3. They basically got it, you know, about 100 feet in the air, got a positive rate of climb, and then shut one engine down. Didn't get any audio of that, unfortunately, but really interesting to get an appreciation for how an aircraft of that size, and I mean, you've got to remember, I'm basically a Cessna 172 jockey, so to watch how these aircraft handle in this configuration was really actually quite interesting to watch.
Yeah, no, definitely a great time. The fun part I had was when I jumped in there a bit with Chris, he's an ex-military pilot, and we did some tactical departures. We took it down to one end of the runway, firewalled the throttles, as they say. We took it up to just over 100% N1, and then released the brakes, rolled our way down the runway. And the idea is that at the other end of the runway, there's some bad guys who want to shoot at you with their guns. And as soon as we got V1 and V, you know, rotate, pulled back on the stick, climbed a fraction, threw the gear up and went back down. So you had the computer voice going 30 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet, 10 feet as I tried valiantly to keep us flat. And then finally, when we came up on not exactly VNE, but a nice, good, fast speed, pulled back to 40 degrees climb instead of the usual 15 degrees that you get coming out of an airport. Pulled it back to 40 degrees, powered our way up, and then pushed over the top somewhere up around 4,000 feet. Absolutely amazing, and I'd love to do that in the real thing. But that's what they do when they're leaving it's a tactical departure from a contested airfield. So a lot of fun that, even in a sim.
Yeah. So huge thanks to Carlo there at Flight Experience Melbourne. He really is a great supporter of us here in the podcast. So we know this has been a bit of an infomercial for them, but they are big supporters of us here at Plane Crazy Down Under, and we really do appreciate it. So folks, don't forget, if you would like to make a booking there, just mention the podcast and you'll get a $10 discount off any package. So better in your pocket than in theirs, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, because then you could possibly use that $10 to donate to Plane Crazy. Yes.
Yeah, sounds like a plan to me, mate. Yes. Okay, moving off. We haven't got any mail to report this week, although I'll mention something in the forums in a minute. But just for now, we're just going to have a couple of shout-outs to a couple of our listeners. No, Grant, that's not for you. Come on now.
No. I was going, it's great to see the virtual crowd once again in the room.
Yes, excellent. Now,
don't worry, I wasn't so egotistical to think it was all... Well, okay, yeah, I was.
Okay, mate, who's first up this week?
Okay, our first shout-out, well, given that you played the applause, we'll flip the list that they are in the show notes. Our first shout-out to go with the applause is Jack Seymour in Wangaratta. He actually went off and did his trial introductory flight in a Eurofox. That's one of the light sport aircraft that are now becoming very, very popular around here in Australia. Now, we've mentioned Jack and his blog and said that he was starting the blog and coming up on his trial introductory flight. Well, he's done it, and you'll find his report on that first flight at studentflight.wordpress.com. So there you go, Jack. A bit more pressure to get some more content in there, because now we're going to be pointing a lot of people at your blog.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you what, you've got a lot of smileys in the blog this week too, Grant. I'd say he's pretty happy with his flight.
Gee, you reckon? You get that feeling?
Yeah. Looks like he's done a 30-minute flight out from Wangaratta, headed south out to their training area, which looks to be somewhere between Wangaratta and Benalla. Those two airports, if memory serves, are about 40 kilometres apart, so not too long to transit. Yeah, looks like he's had a good go, had a play with all the switches and everything else. Mind you, I think he's been studying up a bit, mate. He probably knew just as much as the instructor.
Well, it's always good to know as much as you can about your systems. But it did seem like you'd done a little bit of research. So congrats, Jack. Keep up that research. Remember, for every hour in the air, you do 2 or 3 hours worth of study thinking, what they call couch flying, where you imagine what you'd be doing if you're flying the aircraft at that moment. As Matt Hall was saying in a previous episode, visualization, it's a very important part of his technique, and if you do your ground training and your visualization, your time in the cockpit will be much better.
I think we visualise ourselves flying quite a lot here at the podcast, don't we, Grant?
It's about the only time I get my bum in the air, except I actually got to go flying last weekend. Right. Thanks very much to Brendan, one of our listeners, who contacted us and said, hey, he's going out for a renewal flight with an instructor from InterAir, based here in Essendon. And Paul, his instructor, was fine with me being able to tag along, even though my personal weight reduction scheme took a hit in the last week when I had a week of IT planning sessions and lots of meals and a bit too much booze. And I think I swear I put on lots more than I thought I had. Yes, no, it was much higher just because of that week. Oh, yes. But anyhow, it was still within the limits. So Brendan, Paul and I jumped in a Cessna 172 and flew from Essendon. We went out and went coastal past Moorabbin and then turned inland and went across to the other coast to Turriden, where Brendan and Paul were doing circuits. And then we stopped, got out, had I had a water and the guys had a coffee at the restaurant, which is due to reopen fully for meals any time now, which will be great.
That's wonderful.
We've sorely missed that restaurant, haven't we?
Yeah, I have. I'll tell you what, Wings and Fins.
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah, excellent. Well, it was an excellent restaurant, so yeah, I'm glad to hear it's reopening.
Yeah, no, the lady said that they're just picking up a new chef and should be open again soon. So hopefully by the end of March, we'll see it, if not earlier. But yeah, so after a bit of a drink and a use of the amenities, we piled back into the Cessna and flew straight back to Essendon, once again via the coastal route past Moorabbin. And it was interesting. We're flying towards Station Pear coming in, and the lady said, well, you got a bit of traffic. And I just happened to look down and out just as a DC-3, the Air Nostalgia DC-3, went caning past us in the other direction at about 500 feet below us. I was like, oh, yeah, traffic. But they turned us right, and we came in via the MCG and then across over one of the race courses and in for a left-hand circuit on 17. So a lot of fun. I really enjoy hanging at Essendon. There's always something to look at, and we had the AMSAR Search and Rescue Dornier was there, the Dornier 328, big turboprop. There were three DC-3s on the ramp, three Ericsson sky cranes, a number of helicopters, lots of twins, singles, Polair, the police air wing down the other end and also with the air ambulances. It was all go. It was great. And at the very end, we even got a bit of a tour into the control tower just to say hi to everyone. So absolutely brilliant day. And thank you heaps to Brendan. Couldn't have done it without him. And thanks to Brendan and Paul for allowing me to come along and lurk in the back and record everything. So I haven't gone through it yet, but there's some airborne audio that we'll see if we can't edit down to something coherent and allowed to be published.
Would have been a bit lumpy up there that day, if I remember rightly, Grant. It was quite windy.
Yeah, there were a few lumps here and there, but nothing too bad. We transited coastal down at about 1.5 and came back at 2. So we weren't that high. And yeah, it was there were little bits of lumps, but nothing too major.
Yeah, well, that's great, Brendan. And thanks very much for the offer. And of course, I have not forgotten that you've invited me along for the next flight, mate. So, you know, sooner the better. And I don't live far from Turriden. So if you're lucky, you want to pop down, I can supply the coffee this time. Well, and possibly myself as a passenger.
Yeah, okay. There's competition for the back seat now, is there?
Yeah.
Cool. But yeah, no, it was awesome to get my bum above the ground again. And even though I didn't get stick time, I was very happy to tag along. And it was great talking flying and being in the air. I loved it. So very, very happy boy.
Excellent, mate. Okay, so we'll just move on here to a quick mention of a new thread that's been started in our forum, Grant, on downwind.com.au.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and our friend over in New Zealand, the Grand Vizier.
Yeah, it's Grand Vizier, yep.
So, of course, you know, a lot of people were very interested in the previous new thread about podcasters' beer, but as I've said on many occasions, I don't drink a lot of beer, but my staple diet is, in fact, coffee. And the Grand Vizier here has started one talking about airport cafes and coffee, where to get the best. And he lives across in New Zealand. And he's listed a number of different places around New Zealand where he thinks you can get pretty good coffee around airports. Where have we got? He's listed Wellington, Gisborne, Christchurch, New Plymouth, Auckland, Taupo. Is that how you pronounce that, Grant?
Taupo, yep.
Well, no bad guess. And Masterton.
Oh, cool.
The Snap Roll Cafe at Masterton. What an awesome name that is.
Yeah, I think we know what goes on at Masterton, hey? But yeah, that's a good name for a cafe,
so,
an aviation one.
In Wellington, he's recommending Mojo, Fuel Espresso and Wishbone. In Gisborne, V2. Christchurch has got the Underground. Yeah, a few other really interesting ones in there. So folks, get in on that. If you're not so much into the beer side of stuff, you can certainly comment on the coffee side of stuff. Of course, as I put a reply in there, mate, saying that don't hang around airports so much these days, but I can recommend a few good ones around Flinders Street Station in Melbourne, particularly the ones that give discounts to train drivers. Our friend Ben from ATC Ben, who we all know is Ben, our friend, the air traffic controller. He says all he can tell us here for certain is that the coffee in the ATC Centre at Melbourne is fairly ordinary. So, he goes on to say here too that that said, the contract expired whilst he was on leave. So he's hoping that when he comes back from leave, that the coffee might be a tad better than it was when he left.
Oh, one can only hope.
You never know. It might just be the same coffee that was sitting there when he left.
I'm sorry, man. I'm just like trying not to hurl.
Knowing what a
coffee's bad enough with.
Knowing what a devotee you are, Grant, of coffee.
Oh yeah, no, I'm such a coffee snob.
Anyway, folks, that's about everything we have for you on this week's episode of Playing Crazy Down Under. Thanks very much for listening. We certainly hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. Hopefully, we've kept this one to a reasonably short time, like less than an hour and a half. Maybe this one will even fit on a CD. Woo-hoo-hoo.
Yeah, more importantly, it might take me about 3 weeks to edit.
Yeah, that could be good. We have generally flowed reasonably well on this one, maybe, sort of. Don't worry, you can make something coherent out of this, can't you?
Absolutely. It's been a pretty busy recording day for us. So, folks, if you want to catch up with some of the other stuff we've been doing this week, we actually appear in the entire episode number 83 of Airplane Geeks this week. That should be released probably by the time this comes out. So,
and if that's not scary, whoa.
We've got some more really interesting episodes that we're planning to record this week, folks. So we should be back in another week or two with our next episode. But until then, always remember this.
It's what's down under that counts.
You've been listening to Playing Crazy Down Under, hosted by Steve Vischer and Grant McCarran. Show notes, links to our forum, Facebook fan page, YouTube channel, and Grant and Steve's own blogs can be found on our website, www.playingcrazydownunder.com, or keep up with our Twitter handle of PCDU. Comments or feedback can be left on our website or email us at plaincrazydownunder@gmail.com. If you'd like to help with the ongoing production of the show, feel free to assist via the donate button on the website. Any contributions are most gratefully appreciated. Incidental music and sound effects are courtesy of soundsnap.com, and title music is You Name It 5 by Brian Simpson. Production and editing by Steve Vischer.
Kind folks at the Department of the Bleeding Obvious have asked us to make this statement. The views and opinions we present in this podcast are ours and do not necessarily represent those of groups we work with or are associated with, although we think they probably should. We certainly don't claim to be experts, we're just opinionated enthusiasts who are willing to comment publicly on the world around us. This show is intended as entertainment, and any education that may occur is purely coincidental. As with anything in life, it is your responsibility to determine what does or does not work in your situation and to seek out suitable guidance and/or instruction. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial by Attribution license. For more details on this license and our contact details, please visit our website at www.plaincrazydownunder.com. Thanks, folks.
We've got our package and coming up later in the show, we've got our, what was I going to call it, Grant?
Package of interviews.
We've got a package of, yeah.
Yeah, and the first story for...
Well, mate, turning our attention to, speaking of Jetstar, blah, blah, blah.
Still reading.
I got distracted by my virus scanner on the other computer.
Oh, no.
Oh, there's an outtake.
Yeah. Curse you, Varys. Oh, hello, Hans Bricks. Right, so onwards with the show.
Yes, keep typing while I keep reading. What do you think? Should I let him have a can of soft drink or not?
Ooh, hi, Nico gets some juice, but not soft drink at this time of day.
Well, I think if he does all these...
Well, you have a can of drink sitting right there, so what are you talking about?
Yeah, but I can because I pay the bills here, man.
Yeah, but who cares?
And I'm heavy. Kid's learning fast.
He is. Shut that door and get out of here. You're bothering me, kid.
You're stuck with it.
What, Trish? What? Lasagna?
Well, there you go. You're welcome.
What, is that because you want some?
I've already got a plate sitting out there.
Well, isn't that dinner?
I don't know. Probably.
Well, I would be ringing Mum first, because if that's dinner...
You're dead.
We're both dead.
Not good.
Don't ring Mum first and ask her, because I'm not sure what she's doing for tea, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, she probably will, but you'll have more of one if you eat first and ask questions later. Okay. And that's the end of the blooper reel for this week, folks. But just before we go, that extra voice you heard in the reel there was my son, Chris.
Hi.
And that's Chris right there, and he's 12, and Chris plays the drums, and by popular request of our listener, Scott Axline, over there in the United States, here's a drum solo just for you guys. Cheers, and see you next week.
Chris got me.